And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Bonjour à tous nos auditeurs, mais avant de commencer... Oh, sorry. This is the English show, I forgot. Désolé, mes amis.
Yeah.
Scotty Hertz here in the somewhat bilingual chair. Parce que je pense que oui.
Stay tuned for the French version of Open Sources at 7 p.m.
That's it. Le sur Open. No, that's Open Sewer, isn't it? I don't know. Sorry, mes amis français.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will be catching up with the latest Brexit developments. UK Prime Minister Theresa May outlined her expectations for a hard Brexit, which should really be called the Have Your Cake and Eat It Too Brexit. But we will talk about that and all the latest developments there. And then we will be talking about how we're living in the final hours of Earth. I mean, the Obama years. Donald Trump takes office tomorrow, and the next day, hundreds of thousands will arrive in Washington to remind him that he's yet to win their confidence. And we're going to talk to one of those people who is going to be protesting in D.C. this weekend. And then finally, we will consider what President Obama was trying to say when he granted clemency to Chelsea Manning, the former Army officer who allegedly gave thousands of classified documents to WikiLeaks. Was Obama admitting that maybe his administration's being too hard on whistleblowers, or was it an FU to Julian Assange? We'll talk about all that, and we'll give you the first topic in a minute. Not having a good time, though, is our old friend Justin Trudeau. We started last week with him. We're going to start this week with him. His magical mystery tour rolls on, and I think there was plenty of what was he thinking, like mystery, but it also seems like the magic is gone, Scotty.
The magic is evaporating. He's still quite popular in some respects. You know, the selfie thing rolls on. But
although that did kind of blow up in his face this week.
Yeah, a little bit. But there's still a little bit of a shine there. But yeah, the tarnish is moving in. As I kind of alluded to jokingly off the top there.
Jokingly
was the Justin Trudeau's reluctance to answer some questions that were given to him in English. But I believe it was in Sherbrooke.
Mm-hmm.
So because he was in La Belle Provence, rather than answer the English questions in English, he answered everything in French. And this is a bit problematic, not the fact that he wanted to use French, but as you may or may not know, under the Official Languages Act in this country, we all have the right to be addressed in the language of our choice. And the assumption would be if somebody in Sherbrooke asked the PM a question in English, you probably want a response in English. In Peterborough, somebody asked a question in French, and the Prime Minister answered in English. This may seem like a minor point, but it's actually at the federal level a violation of the Official Elections Act to just assume that because you're in Quebec, that you should answer in, you can choose which to answer in. It seems one of the people that asked him a question was not only new to the country, but was learning English as their first language. It seemed, or that was the one they had a somewhat of a working knowledge of, and he just answered in French. So It was a little bit rude, in my opinion. It may seem like a minor flap, but the official, it's probably one of the biggest ongoing issues in this country, which was made official by Justin's father, Pierre.
I've been jokingly saying myself this week that this is probably the first time a complaint's come to the Commissioner of Official Languages about something being too French.
Yes, because it's usually, the signs, they're not in English.
Yeah.
They're not in both languages.
it's kind of been a faux pas over faux pas. And, that was one of them. I do wonder how much of it was, some kind of political boilerplate, Lyra's getting into the race tomorrow. We should totally show him how French is done and
was definitely
mess up
that.
His crap.
Yeah.
Because,
mess up his crap. I'm going to mess up your crap, O'Leary.
Because O'Leary quite famously doesn't have a fourth grader's mastery of French yet.
And yet he was born in Montreal, right?
Yeah.
You think he'd have at least a word. You don't have to, but.
Well, he did go on Twitter during the conservative debate the other night with a jaunty bonjour, mes amis. So,
Yeah, but I mean, can get that much. I'm cereal box bilingual, you know, like
yes, no, and
over the flow so call, we'll discuss what's going on. Yeah,
so am I. I can go into a convenience store in Quebec, pay for a pop, and say merci. Yeah. I'm bilingual.
Merci pour le pop, and they know exactly what you're talking about.
That's right. But, yeah, there was that. There was the selfie thing where the two girls lured him in. It was the bait and switch. Like, hey, come here for a selfie. And he's like, absolutely. Like, you're going to ratify the UN Declaration of Aboriginal Rights? Say, what? Of course I am.
Maybe a bit more vetting on the selfies now, probably.
Well, I'll give him credit for, like, he just like went right into the boilerplate speech. He just delivered the talking point. Like, he nailed it. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll see the look on his face. He's like, holy crap, they want to ask me like a legit question. But then there was also Peterborough, the woman who has the $1,000 hydro bill.
Yes, who was in tears and...
Yes. Yeah. And I mean...
Three jobs? Yeah, something like... Or working a ridiculous amount of hours.
Yeah. So there was that, and you know, that's one of those situations like, oh, what the heck am I supposed to do here? And, you know, that's kind of one of those damned if you do, damned if
you
don't.
Well, you blame
situations.
The province, which is what happened,
it's kind of legit, because a lot of people are piling on the carbon tax, and it's like, well, it's, you know, that's
it's
the new
It's a portion
thing.
Of it, but it's not.
Well, yeah. It's not even a huge portion. I've been trying to wrap my head around, I mean, it's been kind of like an ongoing project trying to wrap my head around like why hydro prices are so messed up in this province. And it's something like I'm really, you know, if you are someone who's an expert in this, like get in touch with me and we'll tell you how at the end of the show. But I've been kind of want to make this project like find someone or some someones who can explain why are hydro prices in this province so damn high. But, you know, you can go into the prime minister, you can get some attention to it at his town hall and say, like, my hydro prices are too damn high. But, I mean, really, I'm not sure what he was supposed to do. He handled it
Make
okay.
Make them more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it is a tough one when it really isn't within their purview. It could be. And
right.
It could potentially get involved. It, you know, energy... can be a federal portfolio at times. There'd probably be nothing.
Well,
I
wonder what provisions there could be to like nationalize, like come in and say, okay.
Of course they could do that. Sure.
Well, I wonder, but.
That'd make me happy, but.
I mean, legally, I mean, if you sure. want to go full dictator and just like, okay, now we're going to nationalize Ontario Hydro, go for it. But, you know, can you legally get away with that, especially since now that Ontario Hydro is partially privately owned?
And therein lies, well, I mean, I guess the whole hydro debate is a separate topic, but yeah,
right.
when you're, it's not just the liberals at the provincial level, but it's, you know, the neoliberal attitude was like, well, we'll just sell this. And we've talked about it before. It was the same when the Tories sold the 407. It's like, just sell it. Let's make some gravy and then we'll do this. But then of course the asset is in somebody else's hands and I guarantee you the bill will be even higher. Now, what is the prime minister supposed to do with that? If the prime minister wanted to, you could nationalize energy. Like, why not?
Yeah.
But it would be one of those, wow, it's too complicated. And it's not really within the mandate of the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, make your talking points in both official languages or whatever language you want. So, yeah.
So
probably dedicate a whole separate bit to hydro one of these days. But
yeah.
We haven't done that already. But
there was There was a lot of questions in Atlantic Canada about the Phoenix payroll system,
yes.
which has been a gong show,
yeah.
and continues to be a gong show. There was him talking about the immigrant experience and using his fairly wealthy Scottish grandfather as an example of how he knows about the immigrant experience. And then
I missed that one, but
Then he had a video message for Haley Wickenheiser at the Edmonton Oilers game where she was being honored for her retirement from, I don't know, it's not professional hockey, but it's not quite amateur hockey either. So she's retiring
she
from hockey.
Be. She could have been in the NHL.
In a different world.
Probably Canada's best player.
Yeah.
Hands
but anyway, he sent
Sorry,
a video.
Fellas.
He sent a video message, and he was booed. The video message was booed. Of course, Gary Bettman was booed too. His video message, not that it, you know, not as badly as Trudeau, but
he was probably booed for being political. You know, hockey is politicized, but you know, he was that was probably the reason.
Trudeau or Bettman?
Probably. Well. You could argue that Batman is politicized as well, but in another way. But yeah. But maybe just the crowd was riled up. Maybe.
Well, I'll say this, that there, people from out west booed Trudeau's video message at the Grey Cup as well, because I know people who were there. And what the boos weren't loud. It only came from, like, the western section. But and then
finally, your father was a bum as well. Yeah, I know.
And then finally, but perhaps most consequentially, there's now an ethics investigation into the helicopter ride to the Aga Khan's Island, which I still don't care about.
No, you don't. I know that. There are lots of people that don't care. And we actually had a caller, called last week that... Was it last week or 2 weeks ago we talked about this?
No, it was last week.
It was last week. It
wasn't that far back.
It's all a blur. Who also said, you know, well, where should he have a vacation? You know, great point. But there's a massive problem with this, right? Not just the fact that someone... in the prime minister's position, isn't supposed to take a trip unless it's under exceptional circumstances. A good example would be, say, Ottawa's under terrorist attack, and the only thing available is the Aga Khan's helicopter. Like, you could go, and they'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
But in this case, this was all pre-planned. Things need to be vetted. I wrote, actually, speaking of the Spanner book, which I haven't much lately, I did write a bit of a thing about this, sort of a piece of it, in that there, you know, the rules are the rules. They gave Peter MacKay no end of grief for getting choppered out of the bush.
Sure.
Similar circumstances. And that was a government chopper. It wasn't Aga Khan's. Yeah. The Aga Khan is an active lobbyist in Ottawa. I understand that he's a friend of the family, and that's fine. And it was a pallbearer at his dad's funeral. Fine. $300 million in government aid contracts to the Aga Khan Foundation via our government. That's massive money. If it was anybody else, if it was the head of Chrysler, people would be losing their minds. Because it's the Aga Khan, who is a spiritual,
I don't think I would, but
a spiritual leader with billions of dollars, right? It's like he's not really government, but he is sort of.
Right.
If you're a lobbyist, I mean, and there's rules about lobbyists as well and what they can and can't do. Like if everybody at Parliament Hill from the Prime Minister on down, the pages were taking whatever from lobbyists, you'd never hear the end of it. So that's it. It's not just that he has a rich pal. The guy, there's a direct intertwining of the Aga Khan's billions.
I don't disagree with any of that.
Right. Okay. So, well, this is the problem. You're saying you don't care, but
I just don't care. What I will say is that
note to self: Adam doesn't care. Yeah.
If Trudeau wasn't a nimby whiny snowbird that wasn't afraid of a little cold, this
Ooh.
Wouldn't have happened.
Oh wow, that's even more harsh.
So I mean, that's where it comes from.
We'll never
me.
Get him it's on like, the show now. We'll even play the Tragically Hip, Justin. If you want to be on, just call. We've made inquiries.
Well, he used to be ahead by a century. Not so much anymore.
Now he's in Bob Cajun trying to get some votes. Yeah.
Oh, ooh, take that,
I'm
Bob
on my
Cajun.
Game.
No, so, I mean, it's... what I'll give Trudeau credit for is his predecessor would have never done anything like this.
No, because he's more of a stay-at-home kind of guy, to his credit, I would say, if people are worried about taxpayers dime on vacations, like
I don't mean the vacation. I mean the town hall tour.
Oh, the town hall tour. Sorry, I thought he meant his vacation. Well, both. He wouldn't have done either. Right?
Although I'm sure Harper went on vacation.
He didn't go on vacation, but he didn't.
It's like, but know. It wasn't national news. It wasn't like CTV. It's like, no, we found out where Trudeau went on vacation. He went left the country. Like, tell us.
He didn't take his pals to the private island. I mean, there's that too. It's supposed to be a family vacation. It wasn't just the family, right?
I still don't.
It's a junket. Anyway, I'm still going to go to the Aga Khan Museum because I keep hearing good things about it. So I have nothing against the Aga Khan. I'm going to go check this thing out one of these days. We're going to get an open sources field trip. Right? Okay, I'll just go and I'll report back what I saw. It was beautiful. I don't know. Don't know anything about it. If anybody's been there, send me a message or whatever. Let me know how it was. So.
All right.
Give me a 5-star rating as to what's going on there.
Speaking of getting there, Brexit, Theresa May finally announced that what she's planning in terms of leaving the European Union. From the sound of it, I mean, it's a lot of jargony, sort of platitude-y kind of things in that speech.
Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't it just sound like she wants to be like part of the European Union without being part of the European Union? Like, she wants a new free trade agreement, that probably meaning that they're going to have all the same stuff that they had with concerning free trade as part of the EU. They still want at least the free movement of like UK citizens. Like she said, she made the point of saying like UK citizens who are working abroad, you know, you're still going to be cool. You're still going to be able to come home and go back to your job and all that stuff. They still want the open sort of pathways of like security and mutual defense. So like really the only sticking point seems to be like they want to say we don't want to take any immigrants.
Yeah. So why not stay, right? And that is the sticking point, as you say. Like one of the best, there's a couple of good comments. Chuka Umuna, who's a Labor MP, said, mm-hmm. "Out of the EU, destination unknown." So which is a fairly good summation. It is that whole both ways thing. They want the cake and they want to eat it too, to use the well-worn cliche. But it reminded me of the Quebec referendum of 95. It's like, well, we're still going to use the money, with the passports, blah blah blah, but we want to be independent.
Yeah,
and that's just not on, because Europe. Will probably bring the hammer down on them, I think. This is, as we're saying, the hard Brexit. The problem is with this approach. Yeah, what is it? Brexit means Brexit. That's her line, right? Like, okay, Brexit means Brexit. But I'll give you one example. Would be something like the duty-free zone. There are people in the Europe. There are countries and protectorates, let's say, like some smaller islands, Faroe Islands, that are in the duty-free zone, which is the free movement of goods without having to pay anything. You can go and load up on cigarettes in France, come home, sell them at the flea market in Glasgow. There's one example. No problem.
Speaking from experience.
Yeah, well, actually, yes. All true, right? All true. Don't smoke anymore, though. But that might be not the best example. It's kind of like Canadians going to the States and trying to come over their limit. But there's bigger things involved with that, too. A lot of it. A good example would be cars, right? This is the same in Canada. We have lots of car manufacturers. None of them are Canadian-owned. In Britain, I think, who is it, McLaren? Like the race car people are British, but then they've got, you know, you run through the gamut, the names of car companies are all within the UK, yet when this is pulled, the movement of those goods won't necessarily be as easy flowing as it is now.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of those companies will probably say, yeah, you know what, we're just going to move to Slovenia, who have a massive car industry, because, you know, they can handle it better. So the plan is, it's like, well, yeah, we're going to leave the EU. And yes, I think there is a strong, we don't want your immigrants kind of vibe. She didn't out and out say that. Maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into it. No, I'm not, actually. But because that was one of the main drivers of it, right? And sort of parallel to this, too, that's come up, they said, well, we're going to make... It's been implied and said outright they're going to make the UK a tax haven. So rather than have manufacturing as your base, which is already eroded, you know, London is known for its financial wherewithal, whatever. But of course, the financial companies that are in London are saying, well, you know, we're probably going to take these jobs out because, you know, a lot of them are essentially immigrants or people working on permits. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a massive, regardless, it's going to be a massive shakeup. Whether they're able to negotiate similar rules, like Norway, I think, is an example.
Yeah.
Who are out, but they're sort of in. But I think the only people, and that includes me, that are going to get hurt are themselves.
Yeah, right, so. The National Review made that comparison with what they call the Norwegian option, which is just basically, you know... you know, you're part of the EU, but it's like a la carte. Like you can, you know, enact these things, but you don't have to be responsive to the European court. So, I mean, I guess that's an option, although Norway was never part of the EU and never asked to be a part of the EU. And so, I mean, they've enjoyed their autonomy, through it all. And the weird part I've always thought about all of this is that the UK's had some pretty solid autonomy. They still use the pound. They still have their own passports. They weren't even
well. The passport is an EU
anyway.
It's an EU passport,
right?
Because I have one. It may not be, and of course that's something else that's going to get redrawn as well. Because looming on the horizon as well is whether Scotland will have IndyRef 2, their second referendum on independence. The first one was made with an arrangement between David Cameron, I almost forgot his name, and Alex Salmond, first minister at the time.
David Cameron's almost forgot his own name.
David who? Yeah. And it's unlikely that Theresa May would say no to that because it needs the approval. Anything like that needs approval of Westminster. I mean, she's already like incredibly unpopular in the North. Anywhere north of a certain line, it's like, north she couldn't say no to that. But as we know, that you know, Scotland voted overwhelmingly. Like each district voted to stay in the EU. Like it was a solid. The map I saw was a solid yellow. Which great color for caution. So, yeah, it's, and you know, some of those very high, 63%, you know, say no. All right. So that's going to be a future challenge as well. Now this whole Article 50 business, which you may have heard about, is the rules that were made in Brussels under the Lisbon Treaty it's the mechanism for getting out of the EU. But there's a lot that needs to happen over the next 2 years. It's like a 2-year arc.
Well, I think that's not like a legal deadline. I think that's just the deadline Theresa May has set up, isn't it?
Well, I think under Article 50, it's like a 2-year timeline.
Okay.
Well, anyway, that's the number, right?
So, yeah.
But there are other
numbers. That's the number we're going to be working with.
There are other numbers, too, in that to agree to a country, any nation leaving, you need approval from 20 of the nations. So it's 26, right?
Mm-hmm.
20 out of 26.
Mm-hmm.
And a 2/3 majority within those nations to let somebody go. So there is and I think they'll probably say, okay, you don't want it, you're out. I think that seems to be the overwhelming feeling. But, you know, if those numbers don't add up, then it's going to get interesting because you're not necessarily, you know, they're pretty much saying, no, you know what, you can't leave.
Well,
these conditions.
The other piece of it is that Theresa May has said that both houses of parliament will be able to vote on it as well. And, you know, what if, you know, theoretically the House of Lords says, no, we want to stay, and or the House of Commons. I mean, I think it's doubtful the House of Commons would vote to remain, even though who knows what'll happen.
Well, conservative majority, but is it a 50% or is it 2/3? That's the thing. That would be what would make the difference.
I can't remember.
Because I think I'm pretty sure they would make it in the House of Lords, 66%. But as for the Commons, who knows? So yeah, there's a lot of who knows. Like, well, nobody knows how this is going to... I think that they still seem to be in a bit of shock, you know?
Mm.
There's still a bit of market shock going on. The pound is still kind of in the toilet, right?
There was a bump after she made this speech, which I think was quickly tanked by something Trump said. But
doesn't take long.
But, I mean, the flip side of it is, it's a good question about where this 2-year timeline comes from, because she may basically wants all this in place before. Sorry, I was just reminded. I saw somebody from eTalk the other day talking about Brexit for some reason, and they called her Elizabeth May, but it's Theresa May.
Yes, that's right. Wasn't it? The Business Channel did it too.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
We got Elizabeth on the mind. Anyway, no, I don't know. So I don't know if it was Theresa May's own timeline or if it's like in the articles, kind of mandated timeline that way. But a lot of people are saying, you know what, you want to, and she used CETA as an example.
Mm.
The new Canadian-European Free Trade Agreement. She's like, I want an agreement like that between the UK and the EU. And people are saying, well, that took like 7 years
and you've already
to negotiate.
Got
yeah.
An agreement, right?
Right. And you know, and then it almost like failed like at the last minute because of like some town in Belgium.
The balloons, right? The balloons are kind of left-leaning.
Do you want to go, first of all, do you want to go through that rigmarole? And second of all, can you really condense like a seven-year negotiation into 2 years? I think the option is, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. And in the meantime, what's going to happen? You know, what else is going to happen? And someone from JP Morgan, and I think this was in the same National Review article I was reading, but he said, you know, much of the plumbing that supports trade on a day-to-day basis, well, you know, the UK won't have that, the administration and the legal foundation. So even though yeah, new agreements might come out of it, there's still like an underpinning. There's still like this undercarriage of legal, you know, legal what's-its and, you know, diplomatic established things that you're basically starting again from scratch. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, that's a tough place to start from. And that's why nobody says nobody wants to start again from scratch. And so in so much as I think there's, as you pointed out, there's still a lot of aftershock, I think there's also a lot of perhaps misplaced optimism that this is going to be like wicked easy. And I think her speech kind of oversold like, just how, oh, this is like no big thing. We're going to go for a hard Brexit, but it's no big thing. And it's like, well, no, it's a pretty big thing. And I'm not entirely sure you appreciate, either you don't appreciate how big it is, or you're trying to undersell how big it is, because we've already seen some rather negative economic effects from just the suggestion that this is what's going to happen.
It was, how did she put it? She said they didn't want the cliff edge.
Yeah.
They wanted, the cliff edge to be a thing now, but they don't want to be dragged out of it either. They won't be,
right,
know, kicking and screaming by the other countries. And that's the problem, too, in that they will have to essentially negotiate with the other 25 nations left,
yeah,
as to what their trade relationship is going to be. And that's massive resources, time. And one of, if it's to save money, which was one of the arguments that was made, that they were going to save whatever, 350 million pounds mm-hmm. a week, was like, it was quite substantial, right?
Yeah.
And that was going to be dumped into the healthcare system. But now it looks like the way this is going is that their NHS is probably going to end up ripped apart as well. It's already having plenty of problems. Some in some places worse than Ontario's. But, it, you know, and they've already got private arrangements as well. I mean, who knows how that's going to go? I mean, the NHS is it's like us with OHIP. It's like, yeah, you want it. But it may end up being unwound in the fallout from all of this. So, cliff edge indeed.
Cliffhanger indeed.
Yep.
Anyway, we are going to be right back because we're going to talk about protesting Trump with this very special guest from the U.S. And this is a person who does know about protesting. And even though we do know there's a Guelph contingent going down, but we do have a new voice to add to the discussion here. So stay tuned. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Winning the lottery should be rock and roll. That goes out to some relatives of mine who I will not mention their names or anything because they won the lottery. They won the lottery, like the big lottery. Mm. And everybody's so happy for them. And I guess they're buying the drinks next time. I don't know. I don't want to impose, but I'm sure they're getting phone calls from people they haven't heard from in, oh, 40 years. Anyway, that was Hamel on Trial from an album called Choochtown.
Mm-hmm.
From many, many moons ago. We were going to play the Bare Naked Ladies, but unfortunately the Bare Naked Ladies were unavailable. And you've all heard that song a kabillion times, so...
Yeah, it was the one about grade 9, right? That's what we're going to play.
Yes, that's right. Oh, the old apartment, I like that one. I like
that was a good tune, yeah. Good. No,
we'll play that one of these days for old times. Was it a hit? No.
I think so.
In our minds, it was a hit.
I remember Jason Priestley directed the video.
They have it at karaoke. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to watch that.
Yeah. Good times.
Memories. Da, da, dee.
So, yeah, you may have guessed our guest is sort of unavailable.
He's probably in the middle of a march somewhere.
Yes, we invited a gentleman named Courage to come on. He's Aboriginal. He's two-spirited. So, that's two pretty good reasons to figure he'd be marching against Donald Trump this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we couldn't get a hold of him. I'm not sure what he might be up to at this hour. But I know that there is an inaugural concert going on right now, I think, oddly enough, in front of the Lincoln Memorial. I think Trump and Pence were going to talk there. I think Toby Keith was playing, Three Doors Down, and a selection of other Zed listeners.
When is Tony Orlando playing? Is that the actual inauguration, right?
Is Tony Orlando playing?
Tony Orlando has said yes, I believe. I don't know if Don will be there, but Tony Orlando will be there. Yeah, there's a... Yeah. There's a reference for the old timers there. Hey, Don, who's
I
that?
Thought even Tony Orlando turned him down, which goes to show you.
The Springsteen cover band turned him down. Like, if you can't get a cover...
Well, they accepted, but then they're like, out of respect for Bruce, we can't do it.
Did Bruce not contact? I heard that Bruce had contacted them, but you know, Bruce was like, okay, guys.
Oh, he might have.
Sorry, that was my very terrible Bruce Springsteen impersonation.
Oh, interesting side note. Bruce Springsteen is a distant cousin of mine. We're both connected to a Springsteen in our family tree.
So he's going to be on Open Sources soon?
Maybe.
Yeah, we could try.
Maybe after I get an endowment for Guelph Politico.
If my cousins can win the lottery, all of that can happen for you.
Why
let
not?
Me work on Bruce, because I really like that album of Pete Seeger cover. So,
what were we talking about? Trump. So, I mean, there's a lot of Trump stuff going on. I mean, I think a lot of people have heard about Katie Angus, Barb Almond, and Liz Boyle, who are heading down, who are the Guelph contingent of the the Women March. Which the Facebook group for the Women's March is actually, and I looked it up before the show, it's up to 2,000 or 233,272. So it's on its way to 250,000.
Wow.
I don't know how many will actually be there. I would be very surprised if it was less than 250,000, actually.
Yeah, because a lot of them will click the interested button.
Sure.
On everything, though, and then...
But, you know, not everybody's on Facebook, and sometimes people go up. But, I mean, one of the things that is known is that far more buses have been granted permission for the mall on Saturday than for Friday, which is the actual day of the inauguration. And
I'm sure the stringent security regs will be in place.
Oh, absolutely, and I do wonder, and I, having talked to some people who are going down there, they do wonder what the, and this is something I wanted to ask Courage about, if he was worried about any potential blowback in the form of, maybe violence or, police maybe cracking down or something like that. And not to say that the police are going to be looking for a reason, but I mean, just when things are that busy and that energized, it takes a spark to start a fire, to borrow a phrase.
And the trend to when shutting things down these days is they just claim terrorism or a threat.
Sure.
I think there are times where there probably isn't a real threat. They just go, oh, terror.
Well,
go protest over there, nowhere near the action. We have a little pen we've made for you, and
go
into the free speech zone and shut up. That's the attitude, anyway.
For Guelph peeps who are either unable or unsure if they want to go to Washington, there is going to be a gathering at Market Square outside Guelph City Hall this Saturday. Right. It is kind of a solidarity thing. It's not like a march exactly. And we did try to have the organizers in. Unfortunately, they have conflicts too. They work and I think they go to school too. So
full slate.
So yeah, they're busy organizing this, and so I promised them if we couldn't have them on the show, we'll at least plug their event. And you can find that on Facebook too. I think it's Guelphites in Solidarity with Women's March, and that's going to be starting at 12 p.m. And
it's Saturday.
Saturday, yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm just confirming that in my own mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
Great.
And there's going to be a big card for people to sign. And it's meant to sort of stoke thoughts in the incoming administration about equality and justice, social justice. And then they're going to be sending the big card to the White House. And then people are also being asked to bring signs and noisemakers. And I imagine there's probably going to be some speeches. I'm not terribly sure of that.
I wonder if there'll be any pro-Trump people. There might be. That's what would interest me, is whether they're...
Well, I mean, we've in Guelph who...
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
The young woman on campus who was wearing the Make America Great Again hat.
Funny enough, I don't know if you saw it, but they spoke to the head of, I can't remember his name, the Bikers for Trump. I was surprised. He seemed like a fairly well-spoken guy. I think Rosemary Barton was a bit taken aback. I think she was expecting,
Make America great again.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't saying deplorable. It's a bit more. It was a nice little vest, and he's like, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if he seemed genuine enough, I suppose, but I want to know more about this halftime show. He said, we're putting on a halftime show. I don't know what that involves. I don't know. Maybe some of them are entertainers. He seemed a bit upset that they can't take their motorbikes onto the mall.
Or the parade route, because he's talking about, we're going to make them form like a protective circle around him. And it's just like, the Secret Service isn't going to let you do that, bro.
No.
It's not like Smokey and the Bandit.
It sounds like he had a sit down with them, though. It was like, we had a good chat, and we're like, I was like, oh my goodness, this is the new normal.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I mean,
form a bike gang, you can get to the top. Yeah.
I don't think it's even the bike gang thing. I mean, this is the thing people are worried about, right? It's like, if you are flattering towards Trump and, you know, gracious towards him and like say, oh, you're a great guy, like, he's going to have a sit down with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and I commented on Facebook today, the first thing on my newsfeed this morning was that somebody, in reaction to a fashion diss, Trump lost his mind and got rid of this designer.
Oh, Tom Ford.
Tom Ford, yeah. Yes. Got rid of all of his clothes out of a Trump establishment or something. I'm like, all they need to do is keep him preoccupied with stuff like that and who's fired and whose clothes they're wearing. We won't have to worry about the rest. You know, let that be okay.
Well, that's optimistic. That's as optimistic as it is a shame that
I don't know.
Trump got rid of his Tom Ford suits, because those are nice suits. But
if anybody knows of another occasion where there's been a fashion diss from the president, president-elect, I can't personally think of one. I'm sure it's like, oh, those hippies in their bell bottoms think they're the bomb. No, they didn't say that back then. They think they're so groovy, man. Who knows? Anyway, historically, perhaps, but... again, tweeting's like a new thing in the scheme of things, right?
Yes, very true.
Send a telegram. I don't like those hippies.
Send a missive. Send a missive to the hippies.
The gyrocopter will deliver.
Yeah. That's right. I do want to address something serious. Steve Mnuchin was on the hot seat today. They're doing all these confirmation hearings for the people that are coming in to the cabinet position. Steve Mnuchin is the Treasury Secretary. Of course, he was a former Goldman Sachs executive.
Yeah.
He's sort of more famous for his One West group that was evicting people who got reverse mortgages. So, you know, you have houses where the mortgage is in the husband's name, so he gets a reverse mortgage, and then he passes away, and then they evict the widow because the mortgage was in his name, so the reverse mortgage is in his name, and you have to basically pay it back as soon as you're dead.
The banks win. There you go.
Exactly. And so it turns out he has $100 million in undisclosed assets.
Oh.
This I found a little bit more disturbing, even though it has nothing to do with money. Remember Rick Perry, who is the incoming energy secretary?
Yeah.
Apparently unaware that the Department of Energy is responsible for nuclear weapons management. He thought he was going to be the global brand ambassador for U.S. oil and gas, and that's what he'd be traveling around going, yeah, buy U.S. oil, buy U.S. gas. And it's like, no, 2/3 of your budget goes to nuclear weapons.
Because they're energetic. I think he's also the one that forgot about what portfolio he wanted to axe as well, right?
Famously the Department of Energy. Mm-hmm. So now he's in charge of a department he wanted to axe, not understanding.
Trump would be
what
like, he said something about that once. Put him in charge.
I think
Carson in charge
of
housing. What's her name in charge of education?
Betsy DeVos. See the thing about the gun? School's got to have guns because how else are they going to shoot bears?
Hmm.
Yes, it was like the school in Wyoming she was referring to. It's like they got to have a shotgun there so they can shoot the bears when they attack. And as it turns out, Trevor Noah last night on The Daily Show, he says, we actually phoned the school to find out, no, they don't have a school gun to shoot when bears attack.
Sounds like something from Little House on the Prairie. That would make sense. And maybe that's the universe she's living in.
Oh,
here comes Pa. Here comes the bear.
Granted, it's been a while since I sat down and watched Little House on the Prairie, but I don't remember guns on Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, funny. You're right. Maybe the Waltons. Anything that's on the Christian channel, CTS.
Oh, good call.
You'll find out whether it's through the air, too. So Good wholesome shows through the air. That sounds like a plug. It isn't really. It isn't really. Do you want to know what's free without a cable plan? Because that's going up too.
Save it for our family-friendly podcast later. But no, so, I mean, that's, I find kind of disturbing. The DeVos thing I find disturbing too. Not just because.
It's all disturbing.
But it's not just that she wants to defund, like, public education. It's that she's, well, there was a quote from her in Mother Jones that, like, she wants to create God's kingdom on earth using the education system. It's like.
Like the Elora School.
No, that's okay.
It was in the news this week.
Yeah.
It's a separate story in a smaller scale, but.
But I saw somebody on the news this morning saying, what should Trump do? Well, he should open with a prayer. It's like, no, why should he open with a prayer? Not everyone's Christian. Not everyone's religious. Why are you focusing this?
Oh, but you have to be, though. It's a requirement of the position. But I'd be more impressed if Trump get up and said, I'm not really a praying man, but I'm respects, blah, blah.
Oh, you know, I would.
He won't do that. I don't think he is. I mean.
Well, allegedly, he's written the address himself.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait.
So I went.
Normally, I wouldn't watch it. I wouldn't pay any. I'd watch the highlights, but whenever I get a. If I can get a minute. Geez,
I wonder.
Watch this sucker. Wow.
Well, I do wonder which Trump will show up. The one who does, like, all my enemies. You know, they lost so badly. Or the one who was, like.
Sniffy Trump.
Was actually, like, magnanimous on election night. And didn't do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I almost said another word.
He'll have to stop the speech to tweet a fashion diss to somebody. So.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of someone you should pray for, Chelsea Manning. Mm. This was quite, at least I was surprised when I read this news the other day. Chelsea Manning, for a bit of background, was a male army officer, went to Iraq. Or was it Afghanistan? One of the two. Anyway, she was overseas. Yeah, Iraq, that's right.
Yep.
Collected all this classified information, downloaded it fairly easily, and then allegedly sent it to WikiLeaks, where Julian Assange then dumped it onto the world. Chelsea Manning was then arrested, tried, convicted to 35 years, which is an outrageous sentence by any stretch of comparison to any previous whistleblower in U.S. history. She started undergoing gender reassignment, so she's Chelsea Manning now. But she is in a male military prison, Fort Leavenworth. 35-year sentence has been done 5 years, I think, so far.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
But, yeah, the rest of her sentence is now commuted. She will be free as of this coming May. I wrote the exact date down, but I can't find it in my chicken scratches. But so she is one of the about 300 people who have either been pardoned or given clemency by Barack Obama. He's actually pardoned a ton of drug offenders, primarily.
And the turkey at Thanksgiving. But
well, that goes without saying. Mm-hmm. The turkey will be eaten eventually, but no. So,
died of natural causes.
But I mean, by any stretch, Chelsea Manning, this was a huge thing because of, like, you know, when you think of Assange, when you think of Snowden, you know, Chelsea Manning's kind of the only person who's done any kind of time for, you know, exposing government secrets.
Yeah, and Obama said it himself. It was a disproportionate amount of time considering the crime, like somebody else that was pardoned as well. And a part, just as a bit of an aside, pardons are really interesting because we don't have the equivalent in Canada. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned by someone that once Trump becomes president, if it turns out that he's committed a federal crime, he can pardon himself.
Sure.
And this, it's sort of derived from the royal pardon, which is of the British tradition, where I don't know if we still have that here. If the Queen, if you've committed something federal, like say you're committed a treason against the Queen and she's feeling lenient, she can say, you know, let bygones be bygones, and you've been pardoned. And that, I mean, that's your record cleared.
Right.
Good examples of, like, larger famous pardons was Ford pardoning Nixon before the hammer could come down from Watergate, or Jimmy Carter pardoning the Vietnam draft dodgers, which was him keeping a presidential promise, not unlike Trump building the wall. I know there, you know, there's a bit of a contrast there, but it's an interesting tool. Let's say. But yeah, somebody else who was pardoned was James Cartwright, who was the national, what was he, the White House national, he was an advisor, military advisor.
Yeah, right? He was a Marine general and supposedly Obama's favorite general.
And he lied to the FBI. He said, I wasn't the source of a leak. And he didn't even do any time. He was looking at time.
Yeah.
And Obama pardoned him as well.
Yeah.
The Manning pardon was definitely a surprise, and I guess Obama felt that Chelsea Manning had done their time. But there was one pardon that was interesting too. That Oscar Rivera, did you hear about
him? Yes.
A bona fide terrorist by any means, and he I think he was in since 81, so he'd done a fairly long sentence and seen by some as a freedom fighter. Now, generally, pardons are people that are like, we'll call them low level or nonviolent, something like a leak or, you know, you somehow treason, like a spy, right? Treason sure. against your country without actually killing anybody, although spies do kill each other at times. But it was Oscar Rivera was definitely a would be considered a terrorist in the scheme of things. And he refused a pardon under Clinton. So this wasn't the first time this came up. If I understand it right, he said, no, he made demands of his pardon that he wanted somebody else released. And Clinton said no. So he stayed in longer, but he's out now. So I think he would be the hardened criminal that was pardoned in this round
of pardons. I'm pretty sure he's a really old man now.
Mm-hmm. 74 or 75, so probably not a terrorist threat.
Well, he's not going to be doing any bombing anytime soon.
Could go to Puerto Rico, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question.
But
I do wonder, I'm sure this was probably in the works for a while. But, of course, Julian Assange tweeted last week that if Obama pardoned Chelsea Manning, he would, submit himself for extradition to the U.S. Although he's not – this is kind of like a weird promise because he's not being extradited. Like, the warrant against him is for a rape charge in Sweden, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not to the U.S. His concern was that him going to Sweden would be an excuse to have him then shipped to the U.S. So he's been held up in the Ecuadorian embassy.
Like a third-party extradition, right?
Yeah.
Some countries do that, others don't.
But either way, he hasn't left the Ecuadorian embassy in the last couple of days, and he's rather unlikely to, and I think his lawyer...
Last couple of years, right? He's been...
No, I meant he... Yeah, he has, he's been there for 40... But since the Chelsea Manning...
because he said
clemency
I'm
going to... Yeah. He hasn't left, and I don't think he's appeared either.
Backed off on that, so...
Yeah, and according to his lawyer, he said, it was only if it was an immediate pardon... None of this waiting till May nonsense, but he didn't say that.
I think they have some resources on him just waiting there all of the time to see if he steps out of there. Right?
Oh, probably.
If I understand it right, it's like if he sticks his head too far out of the window, they're just going to grab him, right?
Yeah. If he leans too
far
over the
balcony. Maybe one of those new type drones that'll just pick you up and, okay, you're gone. Yeah. So. No, it's not an episode of Sherlock. It's actually reality.
So it's pretty... I think you can make an argument that, because he can't leave the Ecuadorian embassy. He has like a small room in that embassy. It's not a huge embassy by any stretch. And then you have Snowden in Russia, who can actually apply for citizenship in Russia, I think, next year. So you can make the case that perhaps they're in prisons of their own, but Chelsea Manning is truly
hard jail, real jail.
Considering her status as well, being as transgender,
you're pretty much in solitary. If I understand it right, there's no.
Yeah,
I don't get the impression that Chelsea Manning was circulating at all, just because.
No, I wouldn't think so.
In that kind of lockup, it's like there's no way. So
no.
On humanitarian grounds alone,
Yeah, so, yeah. This has kind of been outrageous that this has been sort of allowed to fester, considering, typically when... In the past, when this kind of information has been released, that person's been sort of hailed as a hero. And I think... And I do wonder if the real effect... on Obama's part or others in his administration is perhaps this is a tacit admission that, and this has been a valid criticism of the Obama administration, that they've been really hardline about people who leak and people who give up classified information under the auspices. It's the best interest of the country to know this, perhaps not in the best interest of the government that people know. And Chelsea Manning sort of, became the recipient of a lot of anger about that.
Mm-hmm. I think if the leak hadn't gone to WikiLeaks, it might have been a bit different. But they have a massive hate on for anything WikiLeaks and Assange and any of that gang. So
right.
That's probably was why as harsh a sentence, I think, was given. Send that message. It's like, you can't do this. That's not to say that you know, under their laws that it was correct. It was, what was it, like 700,000 emails? Something massive, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a surprise, really. But, yeah, you know, it sounds like time served. There you go. Done. So it'll be interesting to see what Chelsea Manning does once out.
Yeah.
Do you stay in America? Do you? And then, of course, something else that came up, too, were the people. Leonard Peltier was one that came up in terms of somebody that's been locked away for a long time, political prisoner. Sounds like it was a frame-up by all accounts, by most accounts, not on the radar. And, you know, but this is the problem is that, you know, once somebody high-profile is pardoned, it's like, well, what about so-and-so? What about so-and-so? What about everybody in Guantanamo? You know?
That's interesting because I think it's down to 40 people now in Guantanamo.
They
sent,
that would be
a few more to Oman.
They seem to be working on, the Oman, working on arrangements with third countries who will take them that are, well, they're not necessarily neutral, but they're kind of out of, let's just say out of range. You know what I mean? They're not in play. It's not like they're being, they're not coming up with agreements with Syria, say, or Afghanistan. It's always like a, I wouldn't say a neutral Arab power, but.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to take him a long time to unwind Guantanamo. We'll see how President, still weird saying that, how President Trump handles the portfolio. Watch me pull my collar.
We will find out in 18 hours and 4 minutes.
I got a feeling we're going to have a hot show next week, regardless.
Oh, we are going to have a hot show.
Cause we always do.
Because we're going to have Paul Smith here.
Paul Smith will be talking about.
We're going to be talking about the year in Aboriginal issues, and we're looking forward to having Paul back. He's a Métis writer and activist, and a very well spoken person on Aboriginal issues. So stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for more open sources. At this time next week, you can stay connected to both. You can stay connected to and with us all week long at opensources.guelph.com. You can go to Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and you can go us and see us on Twitter at OS_Guelph, and you can download the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. You can stay connected to me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on Facebook. I am actually making an effort to blog at the Spanner Book. There's some fresh stuff there, spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And we'll call it there for this week's edition of Open Sources Guelph. Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back right here next week for more OSG, and we'll see you then.